drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. The art of Carl Duldig has been displayed across the world, from Melbourne to New York, Vienna to Singapore. And it's fitting because Carl and his family crossed the world themselves, living and inspired by many of those same places, recreating their lives in each new city as they were forced to move. His wife, Slava, was an accomplished artist herself, and apparently she's the person you have to thank whenever you use a bag-sized umbrella. Eva de Jong Duldig has written about her parents' remarkable lives in her new memoir, Driftwood, and she's my guest in the drawing room. Eva, welcome.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here with you.
So tell me about your family. You were from Vienna.
I was born in Vienna in 1938. My parents actually moved to Vienna when they were children, just before the First World War. So they were actually brought up in Vienna, and their whole secondary schooling and their tertiary studies were also in Vienna. So they were artists, and they studied, of course, art in Vienna.
Where did your parents come from?
Originally, they were born in what was then called Galicia, which is now a part of Poland and the Ukraine, but at the time was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So they were Austrians, but lived in Poland as children.
And they met in art class.
They met at sculpture school. They were students of a very famous artist, a sculptor called Anton Hanak in Vienna. And they met in their very early 20s and worked there together for 5 years with Anton Hanak. And then after that, they both actually went to the Academy of Fine Arts as well. So they kept together for a long time before they decided to get married.
Very controversial at the time. Risque. What was Vienna like in those days that they lived there? They were both artists. Wasn't an artistic city at its core?
It was a very difficult time because it was after the First World War. So economically, the Austrian Empire had disintegrated and there was very little work for artists. However, coming out of art school, they did actually inherit the culture of those very great Austrian secessionist artists. They were the people who lived at the turn of the century and they were modernists. And my parents inherited that modernist tradition, which was totally different from what traditional art had been before them.
Well, that was going to be my question, if you could describe their art. It was modernist art.
Yes. Without seeing it, it's probably a little bit difficult to understand. But basically, it was a reaction to what had been realism, and people were given more freedom. The artists had the freedom to express themselves and not to actually concentrate on exactly how things looked. That is, you moved away from photography because photography was there and you actually explored art for its own sake.
Your father is probably the more well-known artist between the two of them, but your mother was very accomplished as well. Tell me about her own accomplishments, because often in these sort of unions, you know, it's a pretty gendered story.
Yes, it can be. And of course, later on, my mother supported my father so much that her own art was really almost ignored, whereas her actual ability was at least equal to my father's. And she was already given wonderful critical acclaim in Vienna when she was a student. But things changed so dramatically for us that she couldn't really go on with her own artistic career to the extent that my father did.
Was that an issue for her? Was that something you were aware of, you know, as her daughter?
Not really, because when we arrived in Australia, she became an art teacher and she loved teaching art, and she was very beloved also by her students at St. Catherine's at the school in Melbourne where she taught. And so she had all her ambitions actually transferred into the teaching. And I felt she was quite satisfied with that. Though at times I would feel, oh, why am I not doing this for myself? And later on, after she retired, she really concentrated on her own art again. It was quite strange.
What was your impression of it at the time? You described it as quite strange. Was it like she was coming back to her full self?
Yes, to a degree. But when she was actually teaching, I think she loved the fact that she was working with young people and she could inspire them. And I think that replaced something of her actual passion for her own creativity. And also, when you're really working hard, as she was at the time when she was teaching, there was no energy left for her own art, and she needed to have the space and the time in order to concentrate on her own art.
You said before things changed. The arrival of Hitler into Vienna came just after you were born, and really we all know what a big shift this was for the world. But what kind of a shift was it for your family?
It was an enormous upheaval. First of all, of course, you never really knew what was going to happen. Hitler was welcomed into Austria by a large majority of the Austrians, but for a huge number, that is about 200,000 others, including Jews and other people, it was the end of their life as they knew it. And for us, it became the end of a period. I didn't know anything about it. I was too small. But for my parents, it certainly changed their lives dramatically. And they were forced to leave the country which they considered their home, which is just a huge thing.
How about the stories that you were told after that period? Was that a big part of their story?
Well, that's what I've written about in Driftwood. I've tried to bring to life what actually happened to us, and I've been very fortunate in that we have wonderful documents which are held in the Daldig Studio Museum. And so I've been able to research the period as best I could, not only through our own documents, but also through what other people have written about the time. And then, of course, my father in particular, I was able to speak to later in his life after my mother died. And so I was able to glean a lot about that particulars, which I wouldn't have known otherwise.
How did your family get out of Austria? I know you credit a game of tennis.
Yes. My father always said a game of tennis saved my life. And it was a bizarre incident where he was wanting to play tennis because he was an outstanding sportsman. And after the Nazis came in, he wasn't allowed to play at his own club. So he tried to play nevertheless somewhere else. And at the time, it was customary for ball boys to be there. And the ball boy offered to take my father's stuff home. And in the process, however, he got knocked over by a car. And with the situation as it was in Austria at the time, which was anything that happened that could put you in the forefront of the police or any other authority, you could be arrested and or taken away. And my father, being Jewish, was under huge threat. And so my mother said, leave immediately. And he was terribly fortunate. And he got first to Germany to get a visa, and then he got to Switzerland. But it left my mother and I totally stranded in Vienna with no papers and no way of getting out at all.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis, and Eva de Jong Duldig is my guest in the drawing room. Eva, you know, you write about this period of their lives, and I mentioned this in the intro, so it would be so wrong for me not to go here, given I've kind of tantalised all our listeners. But your mother and that handbag-sized version of the umbrella. Tell me that story.
Well, the foldable umbrella. When my mother was a student, she used to go with Dad to the Kunsthistorisches Museum, that's the main museum in Vienna, and they used to go there to draw. And she writes about it. She wrote me a note before she died, and she said it was a wet May morning and it was cold and windy, and I had to take this big umbrella and I had to leave it in the cloakroom. And so I said to Carl, why do I have to carry this utterly clumsy thing? Why can't I, or why isn't there a foldable umbrella that you can put in your handbag?
So true.
Yeah. Wasn't that amazing? And so anyway, she went home and she thought about it. And literally a few weeks later, she had actually constructed the first modern compact foldable umbrella. And not only that, she then had it patented and then had it manufactured and actually got royalties for almost 10 years.
That's incredible.
It is really incredible. This is 1929 when she did this.
What does that tell you about your mother? Because she, you know, you talked about how she supported your father's career. She didn't go back to her art till later. She came here and she taught. Mm. She's obviously very entrepreneurial and kind of a big thinker.
Extraordinary. I mean, she writes about it in these notes that she left, that she was actually thinking of something that she wanted to give to the people that would be useful. And she that's why she did it. That was her main aim. It wasn't the money. It was because she wanted to create something useful. I think it's just amazing, really. But it also shows me something else. She was not only determined, she was always a perfectionist. And when the Nazis came in, and I was a little baby, and they came into the flat, she actually hoodwinked the Nazis as well. So she confronted them. And she was able, through her ability to do this, because the Nazi person there had come in and said, "Oh, Mrs. Dulding, I want to buy everything in your flat," because he saw it was all very beautiful. There were the works of art they'd had and the furniture and everything else. And so she said, "Oh, look, I'm terribly sorry, but I've sold it all." And so that, at that moment, to be so resourceful, I really can't imagine what a moment it was. And it just still makes me think what an amazing woman she was.
After your family left Europe, you went to Singapore, then of course Australia, which has become your home. It seems that your parents were able to build back up again after really what was an extraordinary event affecting many people around the world. But what was it about them, their personalities, that they could rebuild basically from scratch?
I've been thinking about that a lot, and I think it was their passion for art that held them in such strong state that they were able to overcome, because they lost everybody on both sides of the family. There was nobody left, and we were a real nuclear family here in Melbourne, and yet I was brought up as if nothing had happened and I was given every possible opportunity to start my own life. And looking back now, I think it is partly because they saw the opportunity in themselves to create all the time. They were so passionate about their art that was able to take them through. Plus, of course, looking after their daughter, which was the other big thing, the main thing in their lives. They had to give me a start.
And what was your own memory of that time? Did it feel disruptive to you or part of a great adventure?
You look back as an older person, and I think that I was certainly looked after and cared for because I was an only child, probably a lot more than if I'd had siblings and things like that. But I was given the freedom to actually go my own way, and that was extraordinary. I mean, they never pushed me into anything. I was able to express what I wanted to do, and I was able, I actually enjoyed being outdoors, so out I went. Both my parents worked really hard. They had a cottage industry and handmade pottery as well. And so I was often left to my own devices. But nevertheless, every time they could, they would do their best to even entertain me. And of course, my father started me off playing tennis, which was the other thing.
Yeah, he certainly did. And of course, he was a sportsman as well as an artist. Himself. And I always think people who have got both those skills are, well, I'm very impressed by people. They seem to me like skills that, you've got to have one or the other. So if you've got both, something's going on there.
Yes.
You have your own impressive set of tales as well. You were a Wimbledon quarterfinalist.
I was, yes. That came about in the early 1960s. I played at Wimbledon. I was a teacher, actually. I'd gone through university and I was teaching. And in those days, you didn't get any help to go to Wimbledon. You sort of took time off. I took 6 months unpaid leave from school, and I took myself off to Europe because I was a top player here just before that. And I was accepted into the draw, singles, doubles and mixed at Wimbledon, and I happened to reach the quarterfinals of the doubles and the third round of the singles at my first attempt. So that was pretty fantastic for me, I thought,
I think we can all agree that that would be a fantastic achievement. And you were the first member of your family to head back to Europe. Were your parents supportive of that trip? Did it bring up memories, issues for people?
They were very supportive. First of all, I was able to visit my aunt, who had saved everything in the apartment from Vienna in her Paris flat right throughout the war. And I visited her in Paris and met her for the first time. And she was, I'd always idolised the thought about my aunt, because my aunt was the only person in my mother's family to survive the war. So my mother always talked about her, and for 30 years she corresponded with my aunt in Paris. So I was dying to meet her. And it was just wonderful to be there with her.
What was that reunion like? Because when you grow up hearing so much about family abroad, I've had that own, my own experience, you know, hearing about your Greek aunts you haven't met yet when you're growing up until you do. There's a lot of anticipation. You know, you really do draw a picture in your own mind of who this person is.
Absolutely. I mean, I was writing to her from the moment I could write, and I was saying, oh, look, I hope you're going to come to Australia. And of course she never did. And then I went over there and it was just as if I was entering my own family. It was amazing because I suddenly had a real aunt I could hug and, you know, cuddle and be a part of her small and tiny family.
And you founded the Dooldig Studio in the early 2000s. What drove you to do that? Was it about honouring your parents and their legacy?
It's partly that. It's also because through my aunt, everything in the Austrian apartment, the Viennese apartment that I've also already alluded to, was actually saved. And it was saved under amazing circumstances in the cellars of my aunt's apartment house because she married a Frenchman. And so when I discovered this and when these things were actually brought to Australia, they became very special. And when my parents died, my mother first and later my father, I inherited all this wonderful legacy. And to me, it was so precious, it had to be kept together. And so it always became my ambition from that moment that my father died, that it was my duty and my honour. And I was actually very privileged to have this, and I was going to keep it together.
Eva, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in the drawing room. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Eva de Jong Dooldig has been my guest in the drawing room. Her memoir is called Driftwood, and the Dooldig Studio is open in Melbourne.